ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from this fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific. It's not only fluoridated, it's also Fukushima irradiated, which according to the Prime Minister is good for the economy, because now everybody can get a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb. Speaking of Fukushima, me and the missus were sitting on the couch last night watching the news. You know, we like to watch a bit of comedy, you know, in the evenings. And dig this. I've just got to stop myself from laughing as I try and reiterate this. Okay. The head of Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant comes out and he says, well, we've contaminated the Pacific Ocean. And nuclear irradiated water has been seeping into it. Really? Like, that hasn't been happening since day one, but they didn't tell nobody about it. And here's the kicker. This is the funniest part. Guess how they're going to solve this atrocious problem of dumping toxic, hazardous waste into the ocean? By dumping chemicals in the ocean. You can't make this stuff up. All right, okay. Back to the interview. My very special guest is Mike Cleland. Hold on a second. It is Mike Cleland. Yeah.
It is. I am.
And he's from hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. Mike, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now, for those who are unfamiliar, would you please explain just a little bit about who you are and what it is you do?
I have been running a little website and blogging and doing audio interviews since 2009. So that's a little over 4 years now. And I've been documenting. It started out as documenting my own experiences. And then I started digging into, you know, where my thoughts and where my sort of wanderings had led me. And so I've been doing some essays and some written work, and the focus has been mostly on the UFO abduction phenomenon, as well as how it relates to a handful of other things, and that would be owls, synchronicities, mythic imagery that shows up in pop culture or ancient cultures, and I don't have any deadlines or anything like that, so I'm just writing for myself, and I'm just putting it out there for myself, and it's been a little bit obsessive for me. And at the same time, I've gotten some pretty good feedback from folks and made some good connections. So, you know, as I dig deeper into each of those subjects, I'm getting, you know, the public forum of being, you know, even though my website is fairly modest, people are getting in touch with me. So I feel like I'm amassed a goodly amount of info on the subjects at hand.
We're talking about just UFO abduction, things like that, right?
That has been a main focus of it, yes. The UFO abduction lore, the phenomena. A lot of the interviews I've done, I've been talking with people who are either directly researching the subject or claim the direct contact experience themselves. Yeah.
Yeah. The fourth kind.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of blurry when you go down that road. You know, it's not that I'm very, very cautious to put things in little boxes or little categories because they tend to just bleed out and spider webs connect them all over the place. And so anytime you try to categorize something, it seems to want to jump out of that box. So I'm cautious to do that. But yeah.
Sounds a lot like me.
I've been listening to your show a little bit. Yeah. So it seems like you're very, you've got a good open mind as far as trying to wrap your mind around these things.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's been a couple of alien abduction movies that have come out recently, one called Dark Skies, where a family is basically plagued by these blackouts that they're having, and the children go missing and this kind of thing. And they go to see this guy who's a UFO abduction expert. And it turns out that he's been abducted himself, and they've got implants, and they're being tracked all over the place. And so it's really kind of coming out mainstream into the Hollywood spectrum. And what occurs to me about Hollywood is they'll tell you what's real, but they'll tell you it in a fictional context, so you don't actually really truly believe that it's real.
Well, that's one way to look at it. And also, I don't necessarily think it's coming out now. It's been around for a long time. Into the 50s, and depending on how you look at it, whether it's in the written work or whether in movies or television shows. I haven't seen that one movie. I do have some friends who I trust who have seen it, and it's kind of what their take on it is that it's played for spooky horror movie stuff. Though everything on your little checklist that you read off on this, on the plot points, certainly matches what people are reporting. I will also say one of the things that also is very normal and is that UFO abduction researchers very often have had their own experiences. Not 100%, but it is surprisingly high. So I'm at the point now where if someone is doing UFO abduction research, I'm assuming that they're an abductee until I learn otherwise. Oftentimes you don't find that out until you go, you saddle them up at the bar after they've given their presentation at the UFO conference and get a couple glasses of wine in them and then kind of needle them a little bit and say, why do you do this? And they'll kind of, whisper that they're, yes, they've in fact had these experiences, which seems more the norm than not.
And also on top of things, what I find interesting is that it tends to be Americans who get abducted. Isn't that strange?
Well, that's not necessarily true. There's plenty of Australians that have contacted me who tell of their own experiences, and so it seems to show no borders. I just think that Americans maybe just have bigger mouths and are more eager to toot their own horn, perhaps, about their experiences, and maybe that's you're just hearing from them more than you might from, for instance, I have a friend in Germany, and the phenomena is completely scoffed and looked down upon, a level of contempt is issued if someone were to come forward and tell of their own stories. Now, that said, people are having the experiences. They are keeping very low profiles and not coming forward because of the social stigma culturally. I think America is something has happened in the last 20 years, and people are allowed socially to come forward and talk about their experiences more than what would have taken place. That is completely... Well, I think that's based on the internet, access to the internet, and people sharing their information that way.
Because I heard a statistic that there's like something like 25,000 abductions reported every year, and about 20,000 of them come from the States or something along those lines.
Yeah, I would be cautious anytime you start juggling around with numbers because, I worked in advertising for a while, and we would do statistics, we'd get to do surveys and things like that. And there was just ways to beef them up any way you wanted to make the info come out. You could do the survey to do that. But what I can say, just as all anecdotal, but I feel very strongly, is that, whatever's going on, the numbers are a lot higher than anyone would dare suspect. However high you think they might be, the phenomena is much more widespread it's shocking to me. And that's one of the jokes that goes around a wise comment that goes around within the UFO research community or the abduction community is that, they kind of say, you want proof? You want proof of this phenomena? Come and look at my email inbox every day. That's the proof. I met Bud Hopkins and worked with him briefly before he died, and that would have been it was 2010 he died, maybe 2011, I'm sorry. And he, he had a laundry basket that he would fill up once a month with letters that people were sending him. And it was shocking. He had no way to keep up with the flood of requests or pleas for help. People who are experiencing this, for the most part, it's very traumatic stuff.
Well, it's terrifying. I mean, look at it this way. Imagine somebody breaks into your house and kidnaps you. Okay. Imagine the trauma that would come through your mind just based on that simple phenomenon, which happens fairly regularly. And then You multiply that by goodness knows how many tens of thousands, maybe even who knows, ballpark figure. It might be like a million people or something that have had this experience directly. You can't even fathom that amount of fear, that amount of trauma, can you? It's just not within your realm unless you've experienced it yourself, isn't it?
Well, it gets murkier than that, because there's issues that are taking place. Let's call them the UFO occupants, whoever they are, whether they're from outer space, whether they're from another dimension, whether they're from our own, you know, parallel world or something like that. There's really no answer to where they are coming from. All I can say for certain is that they are intersecting with the lives of very real people. And, a lot of people have the very traumatic abduction experiences, being taken out of their bed at night, being taken out of their cars at night, being taken in full daylight, missing time events that are documented by, parents trying to find their children. Their children are not in their bedroom. They are missing. They call the police several hours later. They go back in the bedroom and the child is there. That's a very common story. But what is, if it was just being kidnapped and being, having what we now see even in pop culture is the medical exams, if that was just what was happening, but that's not. There's something stranger going on. There's a parallel set of phenomena that don't get addressed as much, and that would be people would have psychic phenomena. People, it's very common to talk to folks who have had this experience, and then you ask them questions. Okay, well, have you had any psychic experiences? And like, yeah, my sense of ESP has changed. It's dramatically more pronounced than before these experiences. That's not going to happen from a kidnapper sneaking into your house at night.
Yeah. Well, can I ask as well, based upon your research and talking to these people, you obviously believe that what they're saying is true, and what the problem is that it's very difficult to manifest some kind of physical evidence to a large part. I mean, many people have turned up with implants in them, though, haven't they?
There are implants being removed. Those are being... There's documentation in place. There's a researcher named Roger Lear out of California who's been surgically removing these. He has amassed, I can't speak for him, but well over a dozen of these things that have been scientifically analyzed, very unusual properties. But at the same time, it doesn't look like a little silicone computer chip, which... that would be perfect, right? But it doesn't look like that. They just look like little calcified little cantaloupe seeds. Once they are studied, they have very strange properties. The fact that the outer layer of these little teeny objects are made up of the abductee's own neuro... nerve cells, made up of their own nerve cells. So somehow, which no one can quite figure out how that's done. So you do a biopsy on the actual skin of the implant, and this isn't across the board, but this is a pattern that he's been seeing in his research. And the actual outer coating is made up of the person's own nerve cells. And that is not, if you had gotten a piece of wood under your skin, you could develop some scar tissue around it and it could calcify. And there's all kinds of things that can take place. World War II veterans are walking around even now with, little pieces of metal that they got, from combat 60 years ago, 60 plus years ago. But that's not what you're seeing in the implants. So the physical evidence is there. People are just shy to look at it. There's a very interesting phenomenon where people are, especially people in the media as well as in the academia, they'll make a proclamation without doing any research at all. They'll say, and it's easy to do, right? I mean, the whole concept is on a very real level absurd. So you can just dismiss the whole thing outright and say, nope, no way. It's ridiculous. It's the stuff of science fiction. It's the stuff of fantasy. I'm going to dismiss it outright. but they do that before looking at any of the evidence.
Well, as Einstein said, condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. And this is what we, I think, are dealing with here in general, is that people are simply not willing to look at the evidence, and it's because it threatens their current view of reality. And it really does. And it actually has real consequences when you learn about these sorts of things. Yourself, personally, have you experienced any sort of shock or depression or kind of feeling of helplessness or hopelessness as a result of doing this research at some point in time, experiencing vicariously through these people?
Well, there's a few things. Well, so there's a term that Dr. John Mack, who died in 2004, he wrote a series of books. He was a Harvard I want to say he was the head of the psychology department at Harvard. I'm not sure, but I know he was in the psychology department. He referred to it as ontological shock, where the once confronted with this reality, your worldview, you know, the house of cards fall and it's never going back the way it was. You are confronted with a reality that is beyond any... You know, it's beyond what we've been taught in high school and in college level physics and things like that. Something very different is taking place. Oop, you still there? Oh, did I lose you?
Black sunrise, shadow coming over the sky. Black sunrise, always gonna be a surprise, 'cause we don't
Welcome
know.
Back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. We're getting on top of the archives there at the Vinnie Eastwood Show.com. So if you have been going there for the last month or so and have been disappointed to see that the archives have not been up for quite some time, don't worry, we're working on it and we are getting the problem solved day by day. So we appreciate your patience, and thank you very much for that indeed. My very special guest is UFO and abduction researcher Mike Cleland. Welcome back. I just kind of I got abducted there by the Skype Corporation for a moment just as we were going off to break, which was rather unfortunate. So I had no idea what you said. When I asked you a question about trauma or feeling of loss or hopelessness based upon your research, because every 9/11 truther goes through this, and they're like, oh my God, 9/11 is an inside job, the government's a bunch of scumbags and they're covering it up and they're trying to kill me, oh my God, everybody's slaves, they're morons, they're scum, I can't help it, oh, I'm so angry and depressed. Is it? And I think this happens to a lot of people who get their reality kind of just, you know, smashed in the face. As it does happen. So could you please share if that's happened to you or not?
Well, it has happened to me, and it does get smashed in the face, and it is challenging. The point of view that I've been working from in my own research is based on my own personal experiences. So I've had experiences that are fleeting and hard to quantify. And I don't have any easy answers, but what has happened is that over the years I have been, if you make a puzzle, right, you put it on the table, you're putting the pieces together, let's say some of the pieces are missing, you can still put the puzzle together, stand back and get a view and make a very clear declaration of what the puzzle actually is. And I'm at that point now where I realize, like, yes, what I have been suspecting and what I have been writing about has somehow intersected with my life also. So I feel like I have like first person experience for feeling like the trapdoor, you know, fell out from under me. I I wrote an essay recently, and it was about owls. And a friend of mine played editor, and she circled one little line. In the line, I said something to the effect of, it was like reality had pushed me off a cliff. And she kind of circled that, and she said, isn't that a little harsh, you know, that line? And I got back to her, and I was like, oh, no, that is very accurate. It feels like, you know, everything, the reality has flipped upside down, and the rug got pulled out from under me. And, it's the only thing I can equate it to is getting pushed into the washing machine and having someone sit on it so you can't get out, and you're just in the tumble mode there. It's very challenging. And then to sort of reemerge into the whatever, this world where, you know, we have preconceived ideas on what reality might truly mean. It is isolating. It's been challenging, I got to say.
Well, I mean, specifically, could you tell us how you actually felt? I mean, was there any one particular moment? I mean, how did it actually change your life? I mean, did you lose friends, family members, that kind of thing?
I didn't necessarily. Some friends faded away, and new friends have faded in. And a lot of that I think is partially my own. You know, like I feel like as I got immersed in this initially, I would say 2009, 2010 were hard. Man, that's only going back a few years ago, but those were challenging years. I was gritting my teeth trying to make sense of this stuff, and I felt like I walked around with this tape loop in my head. You know, like. Trying to make sense, you know, wondering, did this really happen to me? And it's been through the research, and it's been fascinating because one of the things I've done, which might sound absurd, is I've been doing my own, I would almost want to say my diary, my research and my diary and my, you know, listing of my own experiences has been very public on this blog. And it has been rewarding in the sense that I get a lot of feedback from folks. I take a lot of solace in that, as well as it has forced me to be very formal. You know, like if I'm going to write something and put it out there, I've got to, sort of dot my I's and cross my T's in a way that will make it, so I can't be sloppy. Let me put it that way. And that formal process of being public about it has been fascinating. I am actually not sure why I went ahead and did it that way. But the reality shock of how I define, you know, the physical makeup of, you know, reality itself certainly has changed enormously in the past, since starting to look into this, which would have been around 2007, 2006.
And what did you do before that?
Oh, I've been working. I mean, as far as like my work and such, I work as an illustrator. I do illustration work, and so I sit at the desk and draw cartoons. I really didn't have any concerns about losing a job. I've been working freelance since I was about 19, that hasn't really been a concern. But what was happening was that I had a set of experiences that I was actively denying. And then it just felt like the pressure was building, and I felt like I really needed to look into him. And that corresponded with about 2006.
Are you willing to share what those experiences are?
Yeah. And I was waiting for you to ask. So, yeah. So I'm 50 now. I'll turn the clock back to when I was 12. That would have been 1974. I had a very profound nighttime UFO sighting. It was a coffee can-shaped object. In the nighttime sky, I was with a friend of mine. His name was Kenny. I was at his house. It was nighttime. My friend, even then I was drawing a lot, and both Kenny and I would draw. And we had paper and pencil downstairs in the kitchen table. We were upstairs in his bedroom. We looked out the window. We saw this object for maybe 30 seconds, and it did something. Now, I used to tell the story like this, we watched this object, this coffee can shaped object. Here we got video. So this coffee can shaped object, just this little jar, and it was spinning in this odd motion, and it was and it was at this canted angle. You know, like a helicopter would have wanted to have been nice and straight, but this object was at this odd canted angle. And then we watched it in the nighttime sky. And the way I used to tell it is that, oop, the lights went off, and we couldn't see it anymore. And I knew I knew I didn't have the nerve to say what really happened. And after reading enough literature, I just was like, what happened is it disappeared. It just poof was gone. We did something which I'm proud of at the time. We both said, ooh, let's not talk about this. Let's run downstairs. And we sat at the kitchen table and we drew it. We both drew it independently. And I still have that illustration, little pencil illustration from a 12-year-old boy. And I have it posted on my site. And I have since gone back and done a tighter, a more, you know, whatever. I've got a few years of illustration work under my belt. So I have a little tighter illustration now. And it is a very odd thing to see. Now, that happened in, I really don't know when that happened. Now, the other event happened in 1974 also. And that definitely happened in the fall. It happened on a Friday night. I was at a high school football game. I wanted to walk home in time to see a television show that started at 10 o'clock. So me and a friend walked home from my house, from the school, half a mile. I'd walked it a million times. Beautiful autumn in the Midwest. I grew up in Michigan. Calm, cool, beautiful night. There's a spot on the sidewalk. I could put an X on the sidewalk right now. I could go there with a piece of chalk. I could tell you exactly to the inch where we were standing. There was this odd flash in the sky. It felt like God flipped a light switch and then flipped it back off. And in that 1 second, the entire sky lit up this iridescent, rich, self-illuminating orange. And then after it was over, it was jarring. We both were like, what just happened? And even as 12-year-old boys, we managed to talk about, was it a meteor? Was it an explosion? Was it lightning? None of these things matched. It was completely silent. So I got to my house. He lived a little further on into the neighborhood, so he continued walking. When I got into the house, my parents were angry at me. And I was like, what are you angry at me for? You know, like, it's 9:30 at night. I'm home, plenty of time to see this television show. And they pointed at the clock. And I remember this, they actually pointed to the television set because the 11 o'clock news was ending. So that would have made it around 11:30. So I lost roughly between an hour and a half and 2 hours of time. Now, this was well before the UFO thing had come into popular culture. I mean, I just dismissed that outright as like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. And I remember at the time just being bummed out that I missed this television show. The next Monday in school, I was with a friend of mine, and he was there also. We're all sitting around the cafeteria, and we had this conversation. I kind of said, oh, by the way, people were sitting around. So yeah, we saw something weird on Friday night. Something weird happened. I think that's the way I would have phrased it because I didn't really see anything weird. I said, something weird happened on Friday night. And he said, yeah, we saw a UFO with lights and everything. And that was shocked because I never saw a UFO. And I thought that was very unsettling. My initial reaction was that he was lying. And we never talked about it after that point. Now, I've already told this story a bunch of times. I've looked at this experience backwards, forwards, upside down. I've connected with my friend. I actually have not had the nerve to ask him, which is interesting. I'm so open with everything, but I haven't had the nerve to ask him what he remembers of that night. You know, he lives on the other side of the country, and we've only connected through Facebook, which is kind of normal, what people from high school would do, as far as connecting with each other. But, so I guess in a way we have, like a legitimate, what I consider a very real UFO sighting that happened several months earlier. And then this other event that had missing time, my friend said he saw a UFO. So this is what I'm saying is that the puzzle pieces are a little murky. I've had more experiences, but that's sort of a good starting point as far as where I'm at with this stuff.
And how did you feel at that particular moment? I mean, it was a long time ago. You were just a boy, but did you feel strange, like different from everybody else after you had that experience?
Not at all. I mean, I remember it was jarring. It was a weird oddity to see something like that, like that orange flash in the sky. But beyond that, there was nothing strange about it. When I started reading UFO literature in the early 1990s, you know, I immediately recognized the missing time factor, and that always sat in the back of my mind. Oh, that night when I was 12 years old, you know, I wonder, and I managed to just dismiss that outright. I'll tell you one more story. This is a little more telling. I would have been 30 years old. I was living in Maine. on the East Coast of the United States. And then I was living alone, and I was in bed at night, and it was wintertime. It was the winter of 1993 or February of 1993. I woke up in the middle of the night, and there was a bright light shining in the bedroom, and the way the bed was situated, it was pushed right up against the window. So all I needed to do was sit up on my elbow and look out the window. It was bright, bright light shining in the window. I thought it was like the porch light had gone on. There's a motion sensor light that we had on the driveway. And so I sat up in bed and looked out the window, and there were five skinny gray aliens standing very close to the window, walking towards the house. And they were backlit by a very bright light. Now, the very bright light was smaller. It wasn't like, I mean, I did not see a flying saucer. I saw like, it looked like it was not any bigger than a washing machine, whatever was producing the light. So something bright in my, and it felt like instead of looking at the, I mean, it's a scary image. I felt absolutely no emotion at all. Instead of looking at these entities, which were close to the window, I looked at the light, and then, you know, it's very difficult to say how long this lasted. I basically either I heard a voice in my head, or it was my own voice, and it said, "Now is the time to put your head on the pillow and shut down." And I just set my head on the pillow and poof, went right to sleep. I don't have a And the next morning, I dismissed it outright as a dream. I did not even bother to go out and look to see if there was any tracks or any marks in the snow. And that experience was so vivid and so real. Now, at the same time, and this is something I've since learned after talking to people who've had these experiences, I did not know this at the time. And it allowed me to dismiss this as a dream. That entire memory had this veneer of otherworldliness to it. It was very, very quiet. It had a hyper reality. It had a hyper clarity to it. It had a, like almost felt like the internal dialogue in my head was turned down, like the volume of like the normal chatter in my, you know, my mind would have been turned down. I was very focused. It was very almost distorted. And that allowed me to dismiss it as a dream. Those are kind of dreamlike elements that I'm describing, but they are not. They did not match any dream I've had ever before or since. I have since experienced that sensation several more times, and it is very defined. I've spent a lot of time talking to people who have these experiences, and that sensation, it's actually called the Oz factor. There's a UFO researcher out of England named Jenny Randles. I'm pretty sure she coined the term, and it describes that odd, very quiet, distorted reality. And initially I dismissed it, and over the years I've made an effort to look at that very closely, and I have to think now that I experienced something very real.
Okay, we'll be right back after the break. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Cleland is my guest. Don't go anywhere. This is a very interesting conversation. It's already ensued, and I can't predict where we're going to go next. Back in a minute.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, "Listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've
Welcome
had
back.
My share, man. I've been everywhere."
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Johnny Cash with the intergalactic UFO theme song there. "I've been everywhere, man. Abducting people from over there, man. And implanting stuff in their back of their head, man. I've been everywhere." And my very special guest is Mike Cleland. Now, considering that this phenomenon is so widespread, and the government is still, for the most part, denying it, even though they must know a hell of a lot more than the rest of us on it, it makes me suspect that they're involved and or covering it up for a specific purpose. Do you concur?
Ooh, now this is the rabbit hole, which, I mean, everyone's got a different point of view. There's so much information out there that is conflicting. Oftentimes people will point to a piece of paper and say, ah, here's this piece of paper. This piece of paper proves something. Now, my sense is that, yes, that the government, whatever that means, whether that's a secret government or whether that's, you know, in the halls of our elected Congress, they certainly must know something. Now, how much they know, is it a lot, is it a little, that is completely open for debate, and it is also a very slippery slope, because very much of a lot of the information is gleaned from documents. And now, I mean, obviously there's all kinds of folks coming forward and saying, you know, like, I was in the United States Air Force and I saw this flying in an Air Force jet, and it was confirmed on radar. And so there's those stories, you know, little dots in the skies, or let's say very, very big craft that are seen at close range. Now that doesn't change, that's already out in the public. All that information is out there. You can read it in books. You can talk to the people directly. There's people coming forward, very willing to talk about their experiences that they've had, you know, while in uniform. The bigger question is, you know, like, where, you know, what, you know, what truly happened at Roswell. You know, there's some people say, oh, you know, something happened there. And there's other folks that will tell you in no uncertain terms that, you know, live aliens were, rescued from the downed debris pile. Now this gets very murky, because if nothing else, I would have to think that the cheapest thing, the most efficient thing that the government could do, you know, and the way I phrase it is, you know, the best job in the government would be the guy who sits in the basement of the Pentagon and, like, messes with the UFO community. Because all you got to do is put, like, one piece of paper out there, and then, you know, people in this, you know, nutty little sandbox will debate and talk about the validity of that piece of paper for, you know, months, if not years, if not decades. So I think that there's probably a lot of blind alleys that are created to be blind alleys and to lead researchers astray as disinformation. That's not the center of my focus as far as what I've been looking into, although I have certainly heard plenty of stories that point to some sort of, government surveillance of some of the people who claim that they have had direct contact with the UFO experience. And the implication there would be that the powers that be are onto them, you know, are doing their own research very formally, and that they are researching covertly the people who have had these experiences. I mean, the paranoia within this community is off the charts. You know, the whisperings of, like, oh, the van was parked in front of my house, or I talked to one fellow who's had a lot of contact experiences. Him, his brother, his parents, his son. He was sitting in his living room with his son, and they were in the back, and all of a sudden they weren't directly next to the door, but all of a sudden this guy opens the door and walks in. He, like this complete stranger, walks into the living room, sees them sitting there, and seems slightly startled, but plays it cool and said, oops, wrong house, turns around and walks out. And this guy and his son were like, what just happened? Now later he sees the same guy at a restaurant in town, recognizes him immediately, and the guy played it so cool. He was, like, completely dressed like in a business suit when he saw him initially. He was not threatening. He didn't seem like a crook, in essence. And he walked up to him and said, hey, you know, like, I can't help but, you know, recognize you from the day you walked into our living room, and, you know, what's up, and, you know, who are you? And the guy pulled out his wallet and showed him an FBI card,
And, you know, so those kind of stories, where do you take that? How do you interpret that? The only way to interpret that is to see it in a bigger pattern of what people are reporting. So that's just one of, I don't know, hundreds of stories that I've heard, but that one I thought was very telling. And it doesn't involve anyone being abducted in the middle of the night, basically.
Well, the odd thing about the UFO phenomenon is the fact that it's actually been going on for quite some time. And in World War II, I believe, British pilots were reporting a startling number of flying saucers, including some that even had swastikas painted on them. Now, what this has given rise to the belief is that many, not all, but many of these UFO sightings are indeed piloted by humans in classified aircraft. Have you heard anything to that effect?
Sure. I mean, that also gets very murky because it's 2013 now, right? And I have the Air Force has been spending ungodly amounts of money to create secret aircraft. So I have, and drones, and so I have no doubt that there are things flying around, could be very small things. I mean, it's even like the little toy drones that you can buy, you know, like the little funny battery-operated helicopter little things that you can play in your backyard with, have a very weird flight pattern to them. They look very eerie when you see them flying around. They don't look like a like a little battery operated propeller driven airplane that we used to see. There they have a funny motion, so those, I could just see like a little kid putting little lights on that and flying it around the neighborhood at night, and you know, in all kinds of wild stories emerging from that. But so it's 2013 now. The government's been spending bazillions on research, so you know, as of now, it would be very hard to delineate what is a legit, well, UFO means an unknown. I mean, if someone sees an unidentified little dot in the sky that's making odd flight patterns, it could very easily be something totally man-made that the government is just choosing to keep secret. You know, that makes total sense. But if you turn the clock back, you know, to World War II, I feel strongly that the things that people were seeing, we did not have that technology. You know, the flight, you know, the unbelievable ability for these things to accelerate. It's very common for people to report then and now to say that, you know, I saw a craft, a silver disc hovering in the sky, and then it took off so fast from a dead stop to flying what must be tens of thousands of miles per hour. It did that in a microsecond. Or they'll say they disappeared. Or they'll say they, you know, they were going faster than any aircraft I've ever seen, and then they would make a hard right angle turn without any kind of deceleration or without any kind of banking turn. And if a terrestrial airplane or craft had done that, the pilots would be turned to pudding on one wall of the inside of the craft because their bodies wouldn't be able to take the G-forces. So all these things have been reported over the decades. They're being reported now. It is just now that we have the ability to, I suspect we have the ability to, that, you know, we have craft that would seem highly unusual to an untrained eye, let's say at night or even during the day. I've never actually heard the thing. It doesn't surprise me that there are reports that these things would actually have like swastikas or things on them. But there's a trickster element within the entire UFO phenomena. There's a, it actually gets reported where, you know, a flying saucer will fly by and it will actually have UFO written on the side of it. So there's some elements within. Don't ask me. I mean, so these things, the very absurd stuff gets reported all the time. It is whispered often because people are afraid to come out and say it. But these things, so, you know, the fact that, you know, or it'll have a, there was a logo from, this is going back to the 1960s, a
Air Force.
Well, not so much a UFO Air Force, but no, like a logo from a like a UFO cult was seen on the side of a UFO and was reported by people who had nothing to do with the cult, and they came across as very legitimate UFOs. So, what is that logo doing on a you know, a silver disc that people could see in full daylight.
Have you ever get the impression that they might just be messing with you? Like, like you know how Freemasonic occultists or something like that, they'll put all-seeing eyes or black and white tile floors all through the Hollywood movies, and, you know, they don't reference them or anything, but they just sit back and go, you know, like a little inside joke.
You know, the way my friend says that he points out that, you know, sometimes he takes a big wad of peanut butter and puts it on the roof of his dog's mouth just to watch the dog, you know, sort of roll around on the floor and try to get the peanut butter off. And he thinks it's funny. And he equates, like, basically that's what the UFO occupants are doing to us. They're putting peanut butter on the roof of our mouth just to laugh at us. There is an absurd quality to this whole phenomena that makes it easy to dismiss as an outsider, but in a way, like, if I don't hear something weird, or, I mean, if someone tells me a report and it seems normal, I almost dismiss it. I pay much more attention if it is absurd and it is weird.
Mm. Yeah, you know, ladies and gentlemen, that's why you should also pay attention to the Vinnie Eastwood show, because it is absurd on occasion and quite weird. We'll be right back after the break with Mike Leland. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness and UFOs messing with your head, if you lose a sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts. And speaking of which, Mike, you've got a number of other personal stories. I wanted to ask, is there generally a lot of humor within the UFO community, or is everybody relatively serious?
It's probably a little more on the serious side than funny, but there are some funny people, and I draw cartoons for a living. You may not know it, like, from what you're seeing of me now, but I like to think that I'm funny.
Okay.
Should I be funnier? Is that you're giving me a cue to be funnier?
Yeah, maybe. Okay. And now, would you like to tell us a little bit more personal stories? You said you had some before the break.
Oh, okay. So, I told that story earlier about the event that took place in 1974 as a 12-year-old boy. Now, in 2009, under odd synchronistic circumstances, I went to a UFO conference. I was very distressed. I was not at peace. I talked to a woman. Her name is Miriam Delicato. She's had some of her own experiences. She's a very interesting woman. She kind of listened to me, and then she said, you should talk more. You should talk about your experiences. So I went home and I started a blog. Now, initially, I just started posting odd little synchronicity stories. And I've had a lot of them, just, you know, very quirky little coincidences. So I just, you know, that was my initial set of blog posts. You can go to my blog and scroll way, way back to March of 2009 and read those. They're up there, and there you can see how they're stacked up. There's probably four or five of them initially. Now, I knew I had to post that story that I just told you, the missing time event that took place with my friend from junior high school, walking home from the high school football game. When I told you that story, I was very clear that there was, like, I could put an X on the sidewalk. Now, that X would have been in front of a girl that I went to, you know, all through elementary school with me, you know, knew her from, you know, like, just down the street from me, same age as me. We went to kindergarten together. So I can put it, if that X on the sidewalk of where that orange flash took place would be, you know, that would have been right in front of her house. So, you know, the initial posting, I was ready to go. I had written it up just exactly what I told you. I wrote it up as a document. I had some illustrations. I took some Google Earth images of her old house in my old hometown, and I put a little X on the sidewalk using Photoshop. It was nighttime. I was going to post that online, and you know, there's a very simple set of things you do to post something on a blog. You format it, you put it, and then the thing you have to do at the end is just push publish. So I was getting ready to do that, and my hands literally froze above the keyboard, and I was like, I'm a coward. I can't go through with this. Now, then there was a ping on my computer, and I was like, great, okay, I can turn away from this thing that's freaking me out. Like, so in essence, the reason I was a coward, I mean, I would have been admitting that I had what very clearly sounded like an alien abduction event in my life. So there's a little ping on the email. So an email was coming in. So I checked my email. The email that came in said Cindy, and it had her last name. I'm not going to give her last name here. Cindy wants to be your wants to be your friend on Facebook. And this was the Cindy that I had put the X on her sidewalk. I had not talked to her. She moved shortly after the event. I hadn't talked to her in 36 years. And she chose that moment to contact me. I immediately contacted her. We went back and forth. I will say that she was, most people dismiss this stuff outright. She was very interested. And she said something. One of the first comments she said when I basically just sent her the post, I said, I was just about to send this. And she said something that not many people say. She said, oh, that's neat. I have a lot of UFO books. Now, I'll just leave it at that for now. So what happened was, now I'm just kind of back engineering the actual event. And I've scrutinized this event. Now I'll also add that she was my very first elementary school crush. She had bright red hair and freckles, super cute. We knew each other from probably 4 years old. And so
the classic girl next door type thing.
Oh yeah, exactly. You know, and now, so to have her show up, I mean, basically a little thing goes ping right when I'm saying I'm a coward. I say, I'm a coward. I can't go through this with this ping. I have a synchronicity that is meaning, I don't know if your listeners, if they think this is interesting, it's certainly interesting to me. It was really profound. That was that was earth shaking to me, that happened at that moment. What was happening at that point in my life, 2009, I was receiving so many synchronicities. Now, this is something that I ask contactees, UFO abductees, people who claim the direct contact experience. I say have any synchronicities in your life? And they will always say, oh my God, yes, I have synchronicities so profound that it boggles my mind. And that is consistent. That's something that doesn't get reported very often. But it is something that I see as a very real pattern. And I certainly see it from my own direct experience. So I'm going back to that puzzle that I talked about earlier. I have the puzzle on the table. Some of the puzzle pieces are missing. I could easily just walk away and dismiss, the puzzle. When I stand back with those missing pieces, I say, this all points to UFO contact, UFO abduction experiences in my life, but I have no tangible proof. This is a very personal journey of my own. And what is forcing me to pay attention are these synchronicities that take place. And your show ain't long enough. I could tell you more and more and more and just run the clock out if I just wanted to talk about these synchronicities.
Well, hey, how about you talk them out till the end of the segment? We've got 10 minutes.
Okay. Now this is where things get extremely strange. And there is what I refer to as the late night cable TV documentary where, you watch it, it's a half hour long, it's all little sound bites, and it shows the scary stuff of the person being taken out of their bed at night and the medical exam, and then they get put back in their bed, and it's got spooky music, and it's all lit with creepy blue lights and stuff like that. Now, that's the box that we as society have for the UFO abduction experience. Now, that is not what I am finding in my own research, as well as kind of my own personal journey. In 2006, I went camping. It was basically a first date. It was a woman that was in town, much younger than me, and we went camping. I lived very close to the beautiful mountain range in Wyoming, and so we just went out for one night, and it was something I do all the time, just go out camping for one night. Now, it was a beautiful night. You can look at the weather. We didn't take a shelter. So we walked into the mountains as strangers. I camp a lot, so I'm very skilled at it. And so, I was completely in my element, and I was making dinner with this little camp stove on this rock. And I was having this conversation. Her name is Kristen. I was having this conversation with her, and there came a moment in the conversation when I was like, this woman is impressive. This woman, I am thunderstruck by this woman. She is so much smarter and so much more insightful than I ever would have guessed. And it was at that moment that an owl flew right above us. And then a few seconds later, another owl flew above us. And then a third. And for about the next hour, maybe an hour and a half, these three owls flew above us. They landed near us. They landed on trees near us. This was as the sun was setting. There's a full moon. We actually, eventually it got dark. We laid our sleeping bags down on the ground, and looking up at the sky, on your back. I live in the Rocky Mountains, beautiful, clear, open, starry nights. The owls were swooping close to our faces, and it would actually blank out the sky for a moment. Now, we were both blown away. Now, so I go camping one night all the time. We got back. We were both like, wow, that was the coolest thing ever. Those owls. Wow. And then I said, listen, I do this all the time. If I do it again, I'll give you a call. She says, great. So I think 4 days later, I get her on, I call her up. I say, I'm going camping. She says, great. We go to a completely different part of the mountains. It's a little colder that night. We have a little shelter set up. It looks like it might rain. And it's cold, so I say, listen, before we climb into the sleeping bags, the sun is setting. Let's walk up to the top of that hill and get warm. And she says, great. So we walk up to the top of the hill. We get to the top of the hill just at sunset. We're standing there. As we stand there, an owl lands on a branch near us, and then another one, and then a third one. And we spend the next half hour, with these three owls, literally standing, I'm going to say 15 feet, 10 feet away from us, looking up at us. It was, to call it mystical would be an understatement. It was so intense. The same thing happened 4 days earlier. Now, eventually it got too dark, and we walked away, and did I lose your connection?
No, I'm still here.
Okay, I'm sorry. Something just happened.
The webcam's malfunctioned. So yeah.
Okay, great. So here, I'll keep going. So
if you just turn your webcam back on, that'll
work. My webcam. Okay, let me just do this video.
Well, it's interesting that you're mentioning the owls, because I watched a film that was released not too long ago called The Fourth Kind, about alien abduction. And this woman, it was based on a true story, I believe, and this woman, who's a psychiatrist, she's listening to these people who had these abduction experiences, and they all saw this owl outside their window watching them just before they got abducted. So I find that a very interesting synchronicity here as well.
Well, now, so that movie, obviously what the scriptwriters did, they wanted to create a scary movie. So what they did was just look through the UFO literature, and there are all kinds of stories. That would be referred to as a screen memory. Now, there are lots of stories I've listened to hundreds of them at this point, where people will say, here's like a totally typical one. Guy, driving down the road at night. He's going to an appointment. He's going to meet his buddy. He turns a corner. There's a giant 4-foot owl standing in the road in front of him. The next thing he knows, he pulls into his buddy's driveway, And his buddy's like, where have you been? And he's like, what do you mean? I said I was going to be here at 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock. And he said, it's not 8 o'clock. It's 10 o'clock. 2 hours are missing. And there's this very strange, owls don't grow to be 3 or 4 foot tall. A lot of people report these. And those are associated. Now, you go through hypnotic regression. That's its own, you know, messy ball of wax there where it's hard to know exactly what, you know, whether how trustworthy the hypnosis is. But through hypnosis, they'll say, you know, like, oh, I was driving down the road and I saw this owl. And then they'll say, okay, really look at, well, now describe the owl. And they'll say, well, it's bald. It's about 4 foot tall. It's skinny. It's wearing a skin tight suit. It's got little boots on. It's got these great big black eyes. So instead of describing an owl, they describe an alien. Now, this is very common. And what I experienced, I feel strongly saying this, is I experienced a real owl event. And that is something that not many researchers are looking into. And I've taken it upon myself because of that experience I just explained and many others that I've had with what I feel strongly are real owls. There is an association with real owls. And this then bleeds over into the mythic. This bleeds over into the mystical. There's owls are reported. They're reported as screen memories in the phenomena, and they're also reported as real owls. It's incredibly normal for someone to say, you know, I was experiencing a lot of contact events in my life. You know, it felt like they were coming a few times a week and taking me out of my bed. And you know what's funny? At that time, there was an owl living outside my window, hooting all the time. It was there all the time. I saw it all the time. Then when the experience stopped.
Maybe the owl and the aliens were in cahoots.
That is one way to look at it. One avenue to look at this is that could the owl, and this is pure speculation. I got nothing to go on this. I'm just riffing on this. Could the owls be used? There's no animal on Earth that would be better if these alien entities, these UFO occupants, are capable of mind control and potentially seeing through the eyes of the owl. I mean, the owl's got great big night vision. It can fly. It's stealthy. It's quiet. That would be the perfect video surveillance camera for a UFO occupant to tap into. I have no proof of that, but that is a very interesting way to try to wrap your mind around it.
Well, there's been experiments nowadays, even humans, of course, just being able to remote control rats. You know, they put little electrodes in their brains and things like that. And there's also other experiments where you can actually put thoughts inside people's heads using a particular the exact same Hertz frequency that your brain communicates with, like the frequency of your thoughts. I think so many Hertz or whatever. And apparently you can broadcast through a device on that same frequency, and it appears as though people are talking inside your head. So it's certainly not outside of the realms of possibility with a piece of advanced technology that you could tap into the mind of a creature, see what it sees, hear what it hears, and control it like a puppet.
Exactly. I mean, that's the other way to look at this phenomenon. Now, if the owl, which is there's a huge mythology backlog that all takes, you know, has owls all over it. You know, there's owls show up in Indian Native American lore. It shows up in, European mythology. It shows up in Celtic mythology. And so the owl itself could be sort of a mythic icon that is just attracted to this. So the people who have these mythic experiences that may throughout history have been UFO abductions simply associate them with the owl because the owl just happens to be around when these things take place.
We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with Mike Cleland. Don't you go anywhere.
Bonkers.
Every day is a daydream.
everything in my life ain't what it seems. I wear cocktails but go back to sleep. I act real shallow but I'm in too deep. I know I care about insects and violence, and every baseline is my kind of silence. Everybody says that I gotta get a grip, but unless I let you give me the slip.
Bonkers.
Some people think I'm bonkers, but I just think I'm free. And I'm just living my life, there's nothing crazy about me. Some people pay for thrills, but I'll get mine for free. Man, I'm just living my life.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. You know, something occurs to me while we were talking there. It's not even Owl. And my very special guest is Mike Cleland. And we are talking about UFOs, abduction stories, and so forth. Now you were talking about the little chat you were having with this woman who...
I'm going to jump back to one story because this is the kind of stuff that I am drawn to, these kind of details. Now, the woman, Kristen, who I had the multiple owl sightings 4 days apart, that took place in 2006. In 2009, I wrote that up as an essay. You know, the owl sighting is a really interesting story, when I wrote it up, you know, I was very clear that there was this moment she was talking about something that was very profound. And I called her up. We're still friends. She's since moved out of town. And I said, listen, what were we talking about? Do you remember, like, right when that first owl showed up? Hi, Kai. And she was like, oh, I remember exactly. She said, we were talking, and I was trying to articulate the deepest, most heartfelt definition of what God meant to me. And I was like, that detail, which if I hadn't gone back and asked her, I would never have known. But that detail adds a richness and a depth to the overall story that pushes it way into the mystical and the transcendent. Now, this whole thing with owls, like, it didn't have no UFOs connected to that, right? Except for my own history, which at that point I was very shy to try to. I wouldn't go in there. Like, I was in denial. The synchronicity story that I told you, I got a lot of very strange stories like that. The one that I told you about Cindy contacting me on email. I've got, you know, like, it's weird. Like, when I sit down and, like, actually list all these things out, it takes a long time for me to tell all these stories. So what was happening was that I was in denial. It was the owls and the synchronicities that forced me to examine my contact experiences. So the owls had a power. Like, I suspect I gave them that power in the sense that, you know, like, I got kind of wigged out and obsessed after that one event, and I was seeing owls everywhere. And I live in a place with a lot of owls, but, I mean, it was out of hand. I was seeing them five at a time under very interesting circumstances.
That must have been really buzzy, man.
It was kind of a little too intense. I'm glad it has evened off a little bit. Whenever I saw whatever, there was an owl nest near my house, so I would ride my bike and I would see these owls every day. It was just a reminder to me. I mean, so that doesn't count. I mean, there's nothing mystical about having a nest near your house and seeing owls. But when they show up, you know, multiple at a time like that, with the same person, you know, while we were talking about, you know, metaphysical things, that, you know, that implied a lot to me. Now I have written an essay recently. It's called, which is on my site. It's called, Owls and the UFO Abductee. What's been happening is I have been getting people sending me their owl stories, and then I'll make an effort either to get a back and forth dialogue and ask them a bunch of questions either through email or through phone calls. And I've been collecting these stories, and they are so strange. I have, you know, that, and these are coming from people who certainly fit. Some people are very open and very clear. Like, I am a UFO abductee. People will say that. Other people are like, oh no, not me. But then they'll tell stories. You know, they'll say, oh, I'm not a UFO abductee, but, you know, that's really weird. I did have this very vivid dream where these
entities were standing around my bed. They floated me up and then they floated me through the wall. You know, so there's these are the people who are I'm receiving the owl stories from people with contact experiences, whether overt that they can declare openly or whether a little more fleeting in the same way that I would have been just, a short while ago before I really decided like it's not serving me to be so wishy-washy.
Can you explain exactly what you believe in terms of the UFO phenomenon? I mean, like, not prove it, just what your actual belief is. Why are they here? Why are they abducting people?
Okay, I can believe anything, right? So, I mean, we can, do whatever other people who say, I believe Jesus walked on water. Yeah, so I'm going to start from the point of knowing. This is as far as I'm capable of taking the knowing. I know that something is going on, and I can't really go much beyond that. As far as belief, I am so all over the map. I am so, I'm empathic to people's, when I talk with someone, I get so engrossed in their story. I completely get wrapped up in it and I just follow. And so if someone tells me a story that, that they're in contact with entities from the Pleiades, I'm like, yeah, you're in contact. I get it. It makes so much sense. And then afterwards I have to sort of, see how that fits into the grander pattern and such. So my belief is that, and I'm going to include owls in this because this is coming from my own personal experience, is that the anthropomorphized version of ourselves, right? So if you say that the flying saucers are just filled with little scientists and they fly around their advanced technology spacecraft and they land here and they do research, this is exactly what we do in Yellowstone National Park. I mean, I can wrap my mind around that. These guys are little scientists. They're here doing their scientific study, and they are basically us a few years, a lot of years in the future. My belief is that definition is way too simple. It's too simplistic. Something more complex is going on. Something that is more transcendent and tips into the realm of the mystical in a way that forces me at the receiving end of this weirdness to really deeply examine not only myself but reality itself. It is a when the Zen master, when you're not meditating correctly, you're the little monk and you're sitting in the lotus position on the floor of the monastery and your back isn't straight enough and the Zen master doesn't approve of the way you're meditating, he'll come up behind you and he'll hit you with a stick. In a way, the UFO phenomena to me is one of those whacking sticks that the Zen master would hit you over the head with. It is a giant phenomena forcing me, or let's say forcing us, to think at a deeper level and to rise to larger metaphysical challenges. I'm sorry if I got all lofty on you there, but that's as close as I can give you to my belief system.
There have been stories of people experiencing kind of sleep paralysis and see aliens in the room, and they'll say the word Jesus, and the aliens will be like, "Aps!" and just disappear into nothing, as if the very word itself is something that's like an antithesis to them. And this has been reported a number of times, and it has given rise to belief that aliens are not, in fact, just physical entities, that they are, in fact, demonic. Have you heard anything to this effect?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's a very... let's say that there's also plenty of stories where people will say, I saw the aliens in my bedroom. I ushered the name Jesus and they looked at me and just went on about their abduction process and escorted me to the flying saucer anyway. So, so there's both sides of that. The demonic thing is very easy to sort of go down that road. Now, if we turn the clock back a few hundred years, before telescopes, we would there'd be no way we could say that aliens are coming from another planet or another star system. There was, that wasn't even in our dialogue. We wouldn't, those words wouldn't have existed. We would have said they would either would have been angels or demons, right? That's all you get. You know, if we were in a little village in, you know, 14th century Italy or something like that, you know, and someone had an abduction experience, either they would be sainted or they'd be burned at the stake, you know, for cavorting with the devil himself. Now, this, they could be the demonic entities that are, you know, our mythological history is filled with them. They could be poorly interpreted folklore that was based on the UFO lore, on the aliens, whatever they might be, you know, whether they're from here, whether from another dimension, another planet, I can't even begin to guess. So, you know, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Which came first, the demonic entity or the contact with some sort of alien otherness that we just projected demonicness to them? They certainly could be the progenitors of the demonic mythology that is running through our history. Sure. And then, you go to a UFO conference, you sit down with people, you sit down with one guy, he tells you the freaking scariest, darkest, most horrible nightmare story. The guy's shaking, quaking. He looks like a frazzled Vietnam vet, you know? And then you sit down with someone else and she's as wide-eyed and as peaceful and as radiant. And she tells the most loving, benevolent UFO abduction stories about, you know, communing with her star sisters, and you know, so the phenomena itself is all over the map. It's got both the darkest, bleakest, demonic side to it, as well as the most blissful, angelic side to it.
Would that lead rise to the belief that perhaps there are different species that are involved here? That there's a number of different species.
Absolutely. You know, it's very easy to speculate that there's different species with different agendas. And you go to, I mean, there's people you hang out. There's a, I don't know, you're from Australia. There's a little town called Sedona where
I live. New Zealand.
And, yeah, okay. So I've never been to, but I've been to Sedona. So, and there are folks that will just talk with absolute straight frankness about their interactions with the Pleiadians or the Arcturians, you know, or the Draconians. And each of these entities will have their own personality. They'll have their own agenda. And they, you know, they'll be as open and straight with us with these experiences they can be. Now, I love listening to this stuff. I pay very close attention. I am at a loss personally to understand for myself if, you know, how, you know, what's taking place. You know, the way I say this is if I went back to ancient Greece and I climbed Mount Olympus, you know, would I see the gods there, you know, or would, and if someone did see the gods there and they came down, they would treat them as the gods. You know, they would have, there's a whole literature of, you know, the hierarchy of these gods, and the gods have names and the gods interact with people. Is the same thing happening now? And we just call them Pleiadians, or we call them Greys, or we call them reptilians. Is the same phenomena acting out, playing out now? And we are just using more modernized vocabulary words, because no one's going to, you know, pay any attention if we said we submit Zeus, you know, so, or the Archangel Michael, or, you know, so all these things show up in our mythology.
Well, the only ways that you can really describe things that you have never seen before is through creative analogy, isn't it? And that's precisely what people are doing. I've never seen anything like this before. What was it? Oh, it was an owl. Oh, he's describing an alien. And in this film, The Fourth Kind, with Milla Jovovich, they've actually got real footage from this from the case and everything like that, and putting these people under deep hypnosis. One guy actually under hypnosis levitates off his bed. And they've got the footage of this, and he starts speaking in ancient Sumerian.
So that movie has been that's a hoax. That movie that
really,
all
totally
the live footage. Yeah, totally a hoax. They did a beautiful job of it. They played it up wonderfully, and then it's since come out that it's a hoax. You know, there's, so the actual, those guys actually get credited if you like really sit to the end of the credits. The actors that played in the video stuff got, so, you know, fair enough. They played a prank on the audience, but what they were doing is, obviously, they were sifting through the real UFO literature. Their bookshelves sagging with UFO abduction books. Not many people buy them, but obviously the script writers for that movie did, because that shows up where people will be recorded. There's a famous case where a woman spoke under hypnosis, and she spoke in, I think, some ancient Celtic language. And when it was translated, it had this I can't do it from memory. The book is called The Andreasen Affair by Raymond Fowler, and the woman was named Betty Andreasen that had this experience. But she spoke it was translated, you know, there was this gobbledygook. They didn't know what it was, and somehow or another they figured out that it was ancient Celtic, and she, you know, gave what amounted to a very, I don't want to say sugar-coated, but like a, you know, very sweet, like little message to humanity, you know, like whatever, you know, universal love kind of message.
In a language that she obviously didn't know.
And, exactly.
And nobody had ever heard spoken for umpteen thousands of years.
And then the floating off the, I'm trying to think through, I don't know if I've heard any floating off the psychiatrist's couch while under hypnosis, but I have heard very strange experiences taking place, you know, in the psychiatrist's office during these sessions.
We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, after the break with Mike Cleland. I told you this show is going to be interesting. If you're disappointed, I don't know what the hell's wrong with you. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's been a really good show so far today, Mike. We were talking over the break about this movie, The Fourth Kind, and how it was a bit of a hoax, and how you hated it, and so many other UFO researchers hated it. But the one thing that they did indeed think was well portrayed in the movie was this overarching, terrified sensation that abductees experience during these events. And I found that to be a very interesting analysis, because one of my favorite parts of that film was when the psychiatrist lady is listening to a tape, like she was at home, allegedly, at home doing a little bit of work or something like that, and the tape was running, and then all of a sudden you hear this just paralytic, absolute blood-curdling, constant screaming coming out of her, just pure utter horror and terror coming out of her, and she didn't even know that she didn't, and you see her sitting here listening to this tape and the look on her face kind of thing. I was like, whoa.
Now, you know, and the script writers obviously had, you know, access to the literature, and there's so many UFO books available. So are you books written by either researchers or people having the first-hand contact experience? A lot of first-person stories out there. You know, in novelized form. Now, what's happening now is that people aren't really writing books the way they would have been a decade ago. They are just simply going online and writing their stories. So instead of going online, and I've actually, on my blog, I've created a collection of first-person UFO abductee blogs or websites. So, you know, 10 years ago, you would open up a book and that would have to go through an editing process and a writing process, and the book could have to get printed, and you'd have to go to the store and buy it, and, you know, it would take a year for the person to write it. So in the narrative of the book, the author would talk about their firsthand experiences, and they would say, when I got abducted that night, now 10 years ago, what you have now is you can click on to some sites, and it is not uncommon to check on these sites and have people say, I feel I got abducted last night. And so you're getting this raw, unfiltered data. It's a little sloppy. It's imperfect. But, you know, that's the job of the researcher, is to deal with that unfiltered data. And so I think that these first-person blogs, these first-person websites, the immediacy of the internet, which is a completely new phenomenon in the history of mankind, is having a huge impact on how, you know, how people are telling their stories, and at the same time, how people are receiving their stories, how people are hearing their stories. Because, you know, from my direct experience, I have received very little backlash as far as me telling my own personal experiences.
Well, it's interesting to notice that in terms of searches online, I don't know how many years ago that was that I heard this, and it might not be true today, but the most searched element on the internet is aliens and UFOs, followed closely by porn.
Well, it's difficult. I've heard the other way around. I mean, they're very close, side by side, those two in the search engine.
See, one's interested in the out-of-body experience and one's interested in the opposite experience. And here's the other element that I find.
And I'll say both of them are kind of sneaky. Like, people don't want to admit they're reading UFO books and reading UFO sites and stuff like that. It is not something you talk about around the water cooler at the office. You don't talk about either of them.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true. Depending on where your office is or what water you're drinking. But
yeah.
The other element that I find particularly interesting is the denial aspect, because people are in absolute denial that there's any such thing as aliens. And I'm thinking, how could you just say 100% that the size of the universe that is well documented, known, and scientifically proven, that the universe is really freaking huge, that there's copious quantities of planets out there that are just like ours, that can easily support life and so on and so forth. How in the frack could you be so naive, so foolish to believe that there's absolutely no intelligent life of any kind out there whatsoever, that over millions of years or billions of years of the creation of the universe has no possibility of ever developing technology for transferring themselves from one part of the galaxy to another without aging themselves, like, to so on and so forth. I mean, it's within the realms of possibility as far as I'm concerned, because if you've got infinite possibility, there's virtually nothing that doesn't fit within that realm.
Now, so it seems like every week, you know, you see a news story that, like, oh, the universe is bigger than we thought, or that there's more, what do they call it, planets that are in the Goldilocks belt, you know, that are potentially habitable. Oh, we found more of them. Oh, and then it's multiplying. It's changing exponentially every time you peek back into it. Now, the same thing is happening when you look at the very small. You know, people are looking through microscopes and they're coming up with the same, it's almost the same stuff. They're saying, oh, you know, here's what we thought how small could be, but it's really even smaller. And at the same time, on, you know, so it's going, you know, you're looking at the very big, you're looking at the very small. And at the same time, you're looking at the, oh, you know, the people are saying, like, oh, you know, we, you know, theoretically, you know, other dimensions were just like something that we would hypothesize. And, you know, like, it was just like the stuff that physicists would, you know, contemplate. But now it seems that every time you look at the news, there's like, oh yes, there's multiple dimensions, there's multiple realities, and oh, and then that, you know, like, you know, what's the actual reality of the black hole? So all of these aspects of what we define as reality, big, the small, the multiverse, the, you know, the how things can potentially be taking place side by side, time itself, all of these things are previous constructs are just crumbling.
There's nothing new under the sun, allegedly. And what I find interesting is that people have forgotten that. They've forgotten that these things may have been discovered before, and that humanity, through some form of disaster way back in the day, whatever knowledge that we had previous to these kind of experiences, these kind of phenomena, even advanced technology, has simply been lost and forgotten about, and only now we're rediscovering it. And it's interesting you say, like, it's as above, so below, is the old saying. And, you know, so the universe is infinite. So what, people say? Well, you have a look at a photograph of a human brain cell, and it has the precise structure of the entire of what scientists believe is the entire structure of the universe, and it is completely independent of each other. Okay, so it's the micro down to the macro, but at the same time that it goes up and down, it also goes sideways into different dimensions, timescapes, realities, and things like that. There's infinite possibility out there. I scarcely believe that anybody can be sure about anything that they think they know at any point in time these days, considering how much we know that we don't know.
And when I go down this rabbit hole, and, you know, people, like, you know, say, like, oh, what, you know, like, I even use the, you know, like, I struggle with the word real now. You know what I mean? Like, what is the, you know, like, oh, well, you know, like, well, there was real evidence found in, you know, somebody's backyard was a burn mark or something like that. I was like, wait a minute, what does real mean? You know, like, I can get so lost in the enormity of the mystery that it can be paralyzing at times, you know? And then at the same time, you know, like, you can only hold this reality in your mind for seemingly just like a fleeting moment, you know? And if you, it, you know, like, oh, wait a minute. This really happened. You know, that kind of thought, you can't sustain that. You know, you got to brush your teeth. You got to like take out the garbage. You got to make sure, you know, you take the cat to the veterinarian and stuff like that. You know, all these things will invade that moment of clarity. That's just like a fleeting little glimpse. And I think in a way we're almost hardwired not to believe or not to want to explore the monumental or the divine or the magnificent. You know, we're hardwired to explore the mundane, you know?
Well, you have to have something happen to you, in my opinion, that makes you question your reality before you really start questioning it, you know? You can't just walk around and have everything absolutely 100% normal your entire existence and then for no particular reason whatsoever start exploring the mystical, start exploring fringe science and so on and so forth. It just doesn't happen. People don't have that kind of motivation, and what television and entertainment and things like this have been doing to people, I believe, is distracting them from the possibility of what things can really be like and what they truly are, so that it keeps them in this little tiny box, which people call reality.
And, you know, I mean, that little tiny box is. It doesn't take much. I mean, I will say that experience with the owls, with Kristen and I, that box collapsed for me. Like, we both recognized that we had experienced something so out of the ordinary, and it had this vibe. I mean, in the moment, it was spine-tingling how magical it was. We had experienced something so unusual. And that experience, you know, what happened is it was interesting. The box fell apart. I went about my daily life, and the little sides of the box kind of reassembled themselves, and I got kind of stuck in the box again. And then another experience would happen with owls or with the synchronicity. And so I think this plays out with other folks too who've had profound experiences. People who had the near-death experience also tell almost the exact same story, where they'll come back from being dead and their paradigm will have been expanded profoundly. Little by little, the box will reassemble itself. It's a fight, I think, to keep that box pushed away and knocked down.
Mm. Well, you know, I don't think that thinking inside the box has ever freed anybody's mind. That's my belief. I could be wrong. Maybe living in pure denial at all times and dismissing everything that you don't currently believe as crazy is a good thing. I don't know. I doubt it, though. Because as far as I'm concerned, the Earth, the people on it, and the universe, and all the science and everything that we've currently got access to is so infinitely complex that to try and fit it into something, try to pigeonhole it and give it a label, is an exercise in futility. Mike Cleland is my guest, ladies and gentlemen, and you can check out his website. I believe it is hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. Hiddenexperience.blogspot.com. We'll see you again sometime, folks.